We'll begin with a very important welcome to any of our new students who moved in this week, who this is your first weekend here at the parish. Welcome, we're glad you're here. You've made at least one smart decision since coming to college. You can go home and tell mom that you went to Mass on Sunday. No, we're glad you're here. And just a few introductions. So I'm Father Mitchell Baer. I'm the associate pastor here at Newman. We can be freshmen together. This is my first year here, too. I just started in July, and I've been sitting around twiddling my thumbs waiting for you all to get here. So I'm pretty excited that this week is happening. Father Dan Mers is our pastor. Father Dan, you probably saw running around doing hospitality, setting up chairs. You'll get to know Father Dan as the weeks go by. Also, to our resident parishioners as well, I'll introduce Father Royson. Father Royson is originally from India, and he has been studying in Rome. And this semester, he's going to be living with us and here at Newman as he's studying at the journalism school. So we're glad you're here too, Father Royson. So to our resident parishioners and returning students, my homily today is going to be more directed to our new students, but you can eavesdrop and maybe you'll pick something up for yourself too. Today's gospel is a gift in two ways. First, for you students, your first time away from home and coming to Mass of your own accord, it's a gift to you because this gospel is foundational to our Catholic faith. Literally, Jesus said, "You are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church." As you enter into college, this new world, your universe is about to expand dramatically. I'm sure you've been walking around campus like me, or I've been more or less stationed outside the student center, baking in the sun, riding my scooter around. But you've seen, I'm sure, all the different organizations and groups all over campus, and wrestling with the different ideas that these groups represent can be a bit overwhelming. This is true even, or perhaps uniquely, when it comes to questions of faith. I'm sure you've seen the different tents of different Christian denominations and churches and religious groups on campus, and some probably you've maybe never even encountered before. And there's a fun aspect to this, and it's good to go out and meet new people and build connections and get to know people who see the world perhaps a lot differently than you do. And there's an energy on campus. I've felt it. I'm sure you have too. It's fun to be part of this, right? With all that being said, it can be a little intimidating to wrestle with these new ideas. And perhaps questions are going to come up in you. And I hope they do. Questions such as, why do I believe what I believe? Yeah, maybe I was raised Catholic and I went to church a lot growing up or a little. But why would I choose to be part of one church over another just because I was raised in it? Questions like that one and others, I hope, are going to come up in you over the course of this transition. This is the time to ask them and to honestly, earnestly seek answers about the big questions of life. And I hope you make a space here, make a home here. There is a space for you here to ask those questions. There's an amazing community of people and all kinds of opportunities, as you'll find out, to get plugged in here at Newman, to ask and seek answers. Now, a disclaimer, if you do ask them here, we're going to tell you all the reasons you should stay Catholic. And I'll tell you what, there's a lot of reasons to be proud of being Catholic. Our charitable and social outreach. We are the largest charitable organization on planet Earth. That's something to be proud of. Our heroic saints and our rich history and spiritual tradition and the tools for prayer and union with God, that you stand on the shoulders of giants. You're inheritors to an amazing spiritual tradition. Our heritage of magnificent art and architecture, the beautiful Gothic cathedrals of Europe, St. Peter's Basilica, masterpieces of painting throughout history belong to us. The university system itself, we came up with it. Our contributions to scientific progress. I don't know if you know this, the Big Bang Theory was postulated first by a Catholic priest, Father Georges Lemaître. Don't buy the nonsense that says there's some conflict between faith and science. In order for science to do its job, you've got to believe that the world is ordered and has an ordered creator. Of course, above all these are beautiful sacraments which give grace and unite us together in God's love. The list could go on and on of reasons why it's good to be Catholic. But I say this gospel is a gift because among the reasons to be Catholic, this one's a biggie. Matthew chapter 16, verse 18. You are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. Jesus gives the metaphorical keys of the kingdom to Saint Peter, and so gives him the authority to bind and loose, meaning the authority to teach, govern, and forgive sins. So as these questions arise in you, who's to say what's true? One group says this, the other says this. Who's right? How do I get to decide? Who has the authority to say? Well, it's the Catholic conviction that in this scene, Jesus gave to Peter, the first pope, and to his successors, and by extension to the apostles, the 12, and to their successors, the bishops of our church, he gave to them the authority to govern, to shepherd, to guide this church, so that you and I are freed from the need to figure it out all on our own. Why does the Bible say this? You have a 2,000-year tradition to stand on. In the ship that is the Catholic Church, you and I can let go of the anxiety and the worry of needing to figure it all out on our own and trust that we're part of something so much bigger than ourselves. He has appointed shepherds to steer us through the waters of this life. Now, I said this is a gift in two ways, this gospel. The second is more personal. It's a gift to me that we have this weekend because this passage has meant a lot to me in my own personal faith journey. We'll get to know each other as the weeks and the months go by, but just brief bio. I was born in St. Louis, raised in a pretty standard Catholic family. We went to Mass most every Sunday, and by the time I got to high school in sophomore year, I had this really powerful grace that God placed in me a desire to become a priest, and then right after high school, I joined seminary. I was a pretty weird kid, I'll admit that, all right? I never really went through that rebellious phase or rejection of faith that a lot of people seem to struggle with. Well, that's not so much true, because what I'm about to tell you. So I made it to seminary. In seminary, I was, all through high school, I had these deep questions, these probing questions, and maybe some of you share this experience. I know it's not isolated. I went through PSR, or maybe some of you call it CCD. Maybe you were in Catholic school, and you had these deep questions, these wonderings about the faith, you know, the Eucharist, the true presence of Jesus, the Mary, what she got to do with all this, the Bible, how do we make sense of this? And I didn't always get the best answers. And I always wanted something more. I always believed it, but I didn't understand. I wanted to figure it out. And I thought, okay, I'm going to go to seminary, and I'm going to get these real substantive answers that I can bite down on. And there's these, you know, professors of philosophy and theology who are going to give me the meaty answers I've always been looking for. So I showed up to seminary my freshman year, and I got these answers, and it was awesome. And I was like, this is great. And then something unexpected happened, which was I got the answers, and then there were more questions. And I started down this path of, I didn't realize this was even something to wonder about, and I started going deeper, and more questions got unlocked, and again, and I was going through this process of like, okay, when am I going to figure this out? When am I going to get to the bottom of all this and just have my rock-solid foundation? Now, that was happening combined with, you know, I got to seminary, and these priests, these seminarians who I had kind of seen as larger than life and put them on pedestals, I started to see that they were human too. And I started to see some of the real brokenness, actually, in the church. All of this came together about 6 months in February. Never make a major life decision in February, by the way. It's dark, it's cold. And a question came up, the first time one it had ever come up. What if all these things that I've believed all my life aren't true? What if this faith isn't real? What if God's not real? And within a couple days of that question entering into my mind, it had turned into a bout of full-blown doubt and skepticism. And as a guy studying to be a Catholic priest, that's a pretty scary place to be. And for 3 weeks, I held this in, and the grind of seminary. I mean, we were waking up at 5 a.m. in the chapel at 6. We're sitting praying for an hour in quiet, do morning prayer, mass. We come back to the chapel after we've spent all day learning about why God's real in our Catholic faith, and I'm freaking out. Like, what is going on? And what do I need to do? I need to leave seminary? Like, I can't be here. And finally, after 3 weeks, I got the courage to go to a friend of mine, an older seminarian. He's one of my best friends to this day. He was in his final year of seminary. And I let all this out, and I just vomited it up. And all the questions, all the doubts, and we went at it for like 3-4 hours. He was giving me all the answers on the Eucharist, on Mary, on Scripture, on, okay, God's real. It's not an infinite regress into the past. How do we know that, you know, is possible? And all these questions, and he hung in there with me, God bless him. Until after 3 or 4 hours, he reached over, grabbed his Bible, and opened it to this gospel, Matthew chapter 16. And as he read it, I could almost see the scene unfolding in front of me. Jesus is in Caesarea Philippi, says to the disciples, who do people say that I am? And the disciples say, well, some say John the Baptist, others Elijah, Jeremiah, one of the prophets, one of these great teachers of our history who's going to speak truth to the world. That's who people seem to think you are. And then I could see it almost as if Jesus turned and locked eyes with Peter. And staring him down, he says, who do you say that I am? And Peter responds, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. You are God. The first confession that Jesus is the eternal, all-powerful God of the universe. My friend finished the passage and he put the Bible down and he looked at me and he said, Mitch, I can go at it for hours doing all these academic intellectual conversations. I just got 8 years of seminary. I'm in it with the best of them and they're answers that are solid. Don't get me wrong. But he said, at the end of the day, Mitch, it's going to come down to your answer to this question. And you've got to give Jesus the space and the time to ask you this. Who do you say that I am? And I left that conversation still a little confused, uncertain, but hopeful. And over the next weeks, I just sat in the chapel. Suffered the silence of this confusion and these questions. Until little by little, my faith began to come back. And I built it on a firm foundation. And the answer to that question arose in my heart. You are the Christ. You are God, Jesus. And I can honestly say since that time, I have never seriously doubted God's existence or his love for me. Don't get me wrong, I get confused by the suffering of the world just like anybody else, but I'm secure in his love. I know who I am as a beloved son of God. So as you guys continue on this transition, those questions are coming up. Give Jesus the space to speak to you. If you find yourself in a moment where you're wrestling and confused, maybe, just maybe, this journey of faith isn't just you clawing your way up to God, but that he might be on the other side of that, trying to break through to you. And you've got to give him the space. Give him, sit in the chapel, suffer the silence of it. Learn to be alone with your own thoughts. Get rid of the distractions and focus. I can promise you, if you do this, if you make Jesus the absolute number one in your life, he will give you an adventure beyond your imaginings. And you will become a man, a woman, greater than you ever thought possible. You will be a person better than you ever dreamed that you could be. I'll leave you with one of my favorite quotes. This is from Father Pedro Arrupe. It's a little bit long, so if you need to close your eyes to focus, you can. He says, nothing is more practical than finding God, than falling in love in a quite absolute, final way. What you were in love with, what seizes your imagination, it will affect everything. It will decide what will get you out of bed in the morning, what you do with your evenings, how you spend your weekends, what you read, whom you know, what breaks your heart, and what amazes you with joy and gratitude. Fall in love. Stay in love. And it will decide everything.